Guys, this is Succession. This is HBO. If you don't want to hear me talking about Logan Roy, talking about then don't listen to this. There are bad language words in this show. Hello! And welcome to the Rubberneck the Trainwreck episode of Slate Money Succession, where we're going to talk about episode 7, Kendall's catastrophic birthday party. I'm Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of Fundrise.
Hello.
And we have a very strange stranger coming in to join us. Actually, we don't.
Never heard of me.
We have dragged Stacey on. Stacey Marie Ishmael, welcome.
Hi.
We finally managed to get you onto the Succession show, and we've made you watch, like, I don't know how many seasons of Succession to get up to speed on this one.
It's all right. Again, weekends, baby.
What a trooper.
So Stacey's going to join us to talk about Kendall's Hudson Yards 40th birthday party and all of the crazy that goes on there. It's coming up on Slate Money Succession.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its author's intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
Hello, Stacey.
Hi.
Welcome. I'm very excited to have you on because this is more or less what happened at your 40th birthday, right?
I'm not going to tell anybody how old I am, but hard pass, it absolutely was not what happened at any birthday that I've ever had.
Emily, what do we make of Kendall's 40th birthday party?
I mean, this was just like...
And where was Josh Aronson? I thought Josh Aronson was going to show up, but he didn't show up.
I mean, he might have been there. There's a lot of name dropping and a lot of implying that a lot of famous people are at this party, but we don't really see many of these people except for Lucas Madsen, the Gojo founder, who's at the party in the treehouse. But this is the poor little rich boy episode. This is like Kendall's, you know, feeling sorry for himself, having a tantrum in the present room episode with the bow on the motorcycle, but he just wants his kid's gift, breaking down, having a tantrum. Like, we all knew Kendall was going to kind of crash and burn this season, and like, here's how he did it, is how I was looking at it.
I mean, I feel he's crashed and burned like in every single episode this season. Like, this is just the season of Kendall having a series of just crashes. Meanwhile, it's the season of Roman just like kind of coming into his own and being like vaguely useful for a change.
But also horrifying. I mean, there were at least three different things he did in that episode. That was like, hashtag what the fuck. It's just like, my guy.
Yeah, I mean, Roman in a bathroom seems to be the thing, right? How many scenes have we had with Roman in a bathroom? And like, it's where he comes into his own.
Yeah, I mean, I said it in the last episode with Taffy that Roman has a bathroom thing. And then we actually, after we got done recording that episode, I went and watched this episode like right after. I was like, I have to know what happens in the birthday. And I could not, I almost wanted to like get back on the Zoom with you guys and be like, did you see Roman in the bathroom urinating on the mobile phone? What was that? He does deals in the bathroom now. Is this a real thing? Is this the most bro-y tech thing that's ever happened?
It's up there.
This is how Roman wins and Shiv loses, just because he can go into the bathroom and she can't? Is that what's going on?
I mean, like, so there were so many different layers of VIP room in this episode. Like, the whole party is like an ultra VIP party, and there's the clipboard iPad person at the front door asking everyone to give up their phones. And then within the VIP party, there's like the VIP room, which you need to be able to get into. And then within the VIP room, there's the VVIP treehouse. And then somewhere connected to the VIP room is the VIP bathroom. And then the what happens is that Roman sort of extricates Lucas from the VVIP treehouse, moves him into the bathroom, which is even more exclusive because there's no one else in there. And that's where the deal happens. And then magically at the end of the episode, he's already managed to procure himself like another cell phone so that he can call his dad and crow about having got the deal done.
Oh, you think it was a different one? I just thought he like wiped it off and it was fine. But I didn't think too deeply about it. But before we talk more about the episode, I sort of want to hear all about Stacey's. I want to hear Stacey's succession thoughts and big picture take, because I'm so happy you're here with us. And I just want to know everything you think about this show. And also, I'll just set this one more thing up. I also want to know what you guys think of all the backlash that I'm seeing on Twitter about this show. People say it's bad now, and I want to know also what you think of that. So go ahead, Stacey.
When I was working in Silicon Valley and the show Silicon Valley came out, I tried to watch a few episodes and I couldn't because it was too much like work. And I feel similarly about Succession, where I find it hard to be entertained by this show because too many of these people are like archetypes of actual people in media. And too many of these conversations, I feel like, are conversations I've had the excruciating opportunity to overhear at different, you know, horrifying, unpleasant dinner parties and conferences and other stuff like that. So to me, it's like there's this weird combination of hyper-realism, but also both high and low comedy, where, you know, and I don't know if this is something that people are reacting to in season three, but I do feel like there's this underlying uncomfortable self-awareness in terms of the fourth wall, that the show is very aware of its own ridiculousness and in a way brings the audience into that ridiculousness in a way that I find fascinating. I mean, I was really thinking about that in when Tom was like losing his mind and literally flipping tables. And you were like, what is happening with this energy and this dynamic? And it makes the show feel like I'm watching like a suspense film or almost a horror, where you're like, do the people in the show know they're going to get killed? Like, because I feel like I know that they're going to get killed, but do they? It's confusing. And then I also, for the purposes of this podcast, binge watched a lot of episodes in a very short amount of time. And so I think consuming horrifying wealthy people in media in, you know, aggressive weekend bursts probably colored my interpretation of how this is for others.
Stacey, do you see a difference in tone between this season and the first two seasons? Because I do. I think this one is, it's narrower. It is more like, I feel I really need to watch every episode twice in order to understand what they're doing. Like, they've picked the low hanging fruit of like, you know, we're going to make a movie about Rupert Murdoch kind of thing. And now they're like getting into the gritty of it in a way that doesn't reward the sort of slightly more superficial viewing that maybe would have been rewarded in the first season.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like the writing is more nuanced in that way. Like the, you know, Shiv dancing chaotically. But then having Roman sort of again, in this like self-conscious / self-aware way, be like, what were you trying to like dance out your feelings? I think that there's something interesting happening with the writing where it's being referential and textured and layered in a way that I didn't get the same impression of in the first two seasons.
I think that's right. There's a lot of history they need to work around now.
And it feels like the first two seasons, you were kind of propelled by suspense, like what's going to happen? But now we see that actually not that much is going to happen. Like these people are stuck in some kind of hell circle where they're just fighting all the time for their dad's attention. And that's really probably not going to change in any material way. There's no conclusion to this story. It's just sort of like an endless cycle. Like even when something kind of good happens, it's not good. As Tom kind of shows us in this episode where he's like freed from his prison. He's not going to prison. He's kind of happy about it. But by the end of the episode, he's like taking the wrong drugs and feels bad. And he's doing...
He's being a terrible person in the compliment tunnel.
Yeah, he's being so mean in the compliment tunnel. How awful is that?
Because he's taken too much cocaine. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right that we have resolved the question of the title, right? We know who the successor is, and the answer is no one. It's going to continue to be Logan. He's going to stay in charge. And we have resolved the big question of, like, who's going to win the proxy war? Will they lose control of the company? No, they won't lose control of the company. There's no big, like, overhanging, like, I need to watch this show to find out what happens anymore, because we already know what happens. And so now it becomes, you know, as Stacey says, like, you know, a much more sort of detailed filigree of interpersonal, you know, stilettos, you know, people sticking knives into each other. And that is definitely a different kind of show. And to your point as well, I think the other thing that's happened in this season is that we've had this series of episodes with a guest star. So we had like one episode with Marsha, and then we had one episode with Josh Aronson, and we had one episode with Lucas Madsen, and we had one episode with Minkin the fascist, you know? And now, and like, it's becoming increasingly obvious that these are not going to be sort of naturally recurring characters. And it's just like, you know, we bring this person in for one episode and then they disappear. And that doesn't make for like so much fun continuity either.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Like last season, season two, we had Holly Hunter coming back episode after episode, and she had like an interesting arc, and she was a character you can get behind. And you keep thinking with these episodes, oh, we can get behind Josh Aronson. This is going to be fun. No, he's gone. Yeah, and now Alexander Sarsgaard shows up and is peeing on Roman's phone, but you're like,
an app on a phone, of course.
He probably won't come back again. Like, why do I need to care? Like, they're compelling, but it's not enough for a TV show. You need continuity.
It feels like every episode is a bottle episode.
Yes.
And the whole thing is just that, like, the characters are mostly the dysfunction of the interpersonal relationships in a much tighter world than previously.
It could be a function of filming in a pandemic, to be fair, right? I mean, Taffy kind of talked about that a little bit, but there are all kinds of constraints put upon.
I mean, they had a bunch of people at a party.
That's true. This party was so bad. Can we talk about it?
Yes. Yes. tell me the ways in which the party was terrible.
It just, okay, so this is Kendall's birthday party. And I know this because there was a sign up. Did you guys catch the sign? It was the notorious Ken ready to die is the scroll on the building outside the party.
Because he was going to crucify himself?
Yeah. So all that's really bad. But like,
while singing Billy Joel.
But like, no one's having fun at the party, really. Like, no one's having fun at the party, as far as I can tell. People look bored. Like when you go, it reminded me of like early aughts, like dot-com bubble kind of parties where everyone was kind of there for work and like getting drunk, but like it wasn't really fun in any way. And like Kendall himself walks around the party. No one seems to even care that he exists. No one's coming up to him being like, hey man, happy birthday.
I thought that was such an amazing dramatic choice to have him. He didn't have a single meaningful interaction with anybody other than his siblings,
yeah,
and his assistants for the entirety of that episode. Like there was like one scene when he was walking past the staircase and like somebody like kind of did a toast after he did a toast to them, but it wasn't clear that any of these people even knew that it was his party.
Yeah.
Like that was the level of distance.
There's that wonderful scene where Shiv is like, go on, tell us who's here. And he goes, who isn't? And then they're like, all the three siblings like, start piling on. They're like, your dad, your mom, your wife and kids.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was, it got him.
That's stiletto that Felix mentioned.
And then that amazing way in which like Connor managed to work out that the single best way to just really fucking get under Kendall's skin would just be to keep his coat on the whole time. And like Connor becomes the cruel one.
I kept expecting a reveal. Like by the end, I was like, what's under the coat? Is it a gun? Like what's happening here?
It was literally just a way for him to needle Ken. And Connor has always been the least needly of the siblings, right? He's always been he's terrible, but he's not been an expert at like being particularly mean to any of the others. And this was just him saying, all right, you know, this is time for me to just like poke Kendall's buttons in the way that, you know, an older brother knows how to do.
But did he, like, was this, if in the mind of Connor, was this a snap decision when he realized there was a coat jack? Did he go there planning not to take his coat off? Just like, inquiring minds want to know.
I felt like he had a standing practice.
Did you notice the weird, like, click, click, click thing that he did?
And your coat?
I will remain coated, thank you, as is my right.
Because kind of like deranged dolphin. And I was like, that was him. That was him just kind of saying, all right, I know what I'm doing here.
I thought it led the whole coat thing and Comfrey, the assistant, who I want to talk about her rebellion in this episode. But the way Willa jumps in to protect Connor and fight back against Comfrey trying to take
against a cashmere sweater. Like, let's be clear what she's protecting.
He's pulling it almost 1%. Do you know who he is?
It was 4 million people, Emily. 4 million.
It was kind of nice. It was like they were teaming up. She was on his side. That's kind of a rare moment, I thought.
Yeah, nobody in the show is on anybody else's side.
That's true.
Well, no, that's actually not true. Like, what you see at the beginning of this episode, and in fact, kind of throughout the episode, is that the one person who is unambiguously on Kendall's side is Naomi. And you kind of wonder why exactly. Like, how does she manage to just be so supportive without having any obvious, like, ulterior motives beyond perhaps, like, actually, I wouldn't mind, like, dating a guy with $2 billion in cash.
Okay, so what she did kind of say, she's like, well, what would your take be? But at the beginning when he's like, this seems like a good idea, right? And she's like, she gives the most insane non-answer. She's like, yeah, that's right. And you're like, what is right? Which part of his statement about if he should be crucified singing Billy Joel are you agreeing or disagreeing with? It was sort of a masterclass in obfuscation.
I didn't think she approved of any of it. And then when he finally says he's not going to do it because it's stupid, the relief was palpable. And then in fact, the PR woman says something like, thank fucking God. But everyone was very happy when he decided not to be.
No, I mean, everyone knew it was crazy, but like, and obviously Naomi knew it was crazy, but she was going to be there and support him in his crazy if that was what he wanted to do. Well, you know, someone like Roman is just like, I'm here to watch
rubberneck your train wreck.
Rubberneck the train wreck, exactly.
And I thought there was a nice parallel when he's contemplating. So like, I guess the big dramatic moment is his father, Logan, sends him a birthday card with the word happy birthday, with the words happy birthday
crossed out
and offering to buy out his shares, which for over $2 billion, which in the language and world of Succession is insulting to Kendall. Like, in what world do you get an offer for $2 billion and you're like, upset about it. He was upset about it, right?
I love how it was 2 billion and 15 million. Like, we'll throw in an extra 15 million. But yeah, like, it's like, no, I mean, Kendall clearly assumes, given his relationship with his father, that anything that his father wants him to do is something that his father doesn't want him to not do. So his first reaction is to not do the thing that his father doesn't want. And then his second reaction is like, I could buy all of these newspapers.
But maybe, Felix, should we as a public service explain what's going on? So only family members could buy out Kendall. Do I have that right? Like, because of the the way the shares are structured, because these are Class A shares or whatever. Only the Roys.
They can't sell to people outside the family.
And that's upsetting because Shiv wanted the opportunity to be involved in this deal also, because the opportunity is to get more shares of Waystar Royco, basically, to get this like primo stock in their hands away from Kendall.
Yeah, it's not clear. It's not clear like where those shares would go. But what Shiv was upset about was that this deal to offer Kendall $2 billion to sell his shares and go away was one that was worked out between Logan and Roman, and Shiv was not involved. And she was like, how is it that I was not in the loop on this and Roman was? And that just really pissed her off. And then on top of that, like, Roman gets to, you know, play with toilets with Lucas Madsen and do a deal that way. And she's like, you know, I am technically the president of this company, but in reality, I've just been marginalized everywhere. I have no role here anymore. I was the one who fucking saved the company by doing the deal with, you know, Sandy Jr. And now I'm just on the outside looking in. What the fuck is going on? And so she's, you know, pissed off for that reason.
I mean, it's interesting you use the word marginalized, because, you know, Roman like very explicitly uses kind of the rhetorical flourish of, I'm going to take your social justice language and turn it back on you. And it's like, yeah, you know, the men got together and like we mansplained all of this away from you. And it was there were so many pointy, sharp edge moments in that episode, but that really felt like one of the main ones, because I think he was making explicit the dynamic that it's like, we see you trying to be a man in the room, but you're not, and we're gonna say that out loud, you know. And it's a really, in the way that her character has been presented, it seems like such a vulnerability for her, where she both tries to, I don't know, like weaponize wiles while also wanting to be part of the boys' club and being aware of that inherent contradiction, but hoping that other people aren't when clearly they are.
Yeah, this seems like the arc of the season. Pretty much is like Shiv thinking she's come in, but really she's still on the outside and bottom
line. Yeah, it's very Cersei Lannister.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, she's clearly much more in than Connor, right? Like, you remember that whole conversation that she had with Connor, where Connor's like, I want a, you know, current affairs TV show. And she's like, do you want like a wine tasting show? Like, it's clear that she has, you know, like there's a pecking order right now in among the siblings where Kendall's at the bottom because he's reached like rock bottom at this point. And then it's Connor, and then it's Shiv, and then it's Roman. But Roman is doing his very best, like after having managed to like push Kendall to the curb, to maximize the amount of space between himself and Siobhan, because she's the only competition to him anymore.
And this episode kind of, it's just like an unabashed win for him. Like, he's walking home, he tells the car, I don't need you. I'm going to walk home. He leaves his train.
I mean, obviously that car did not leave, because they were probably under orders to be like, don't let that dude out of your sight. But it was a cute detail.
Yeah.
One of my favorite details in this episode is when there's this brief close-up shot of Madsen's phone and he's playing a video game in the middle of this party. And I'm like, I may or may not have done that more than one time, but it was such a good rendition of, this dude doesn't want to be there. I'm not going to say the thing that he said he was there for, but he doesn't want to be there. And he's like trying to entertain himself in a very introvert nerd markery kind of way. I just like, I'm just going to play this mobile game while this very expensive party is going on around me.
Why go at all then? I didn't really get that. I mean, it's just to position him, I guess, as like this tech bro, the Odin of Coden or whatever, but
yeah, it was also like, it's very interesting to see how Kendall approaches him, right? Because Kendall and Roman both like try to seduce him in their own ways, right? And Kendall is like, what would you like? I will give you anything you want. Do you want drugs? Do you want hookers? Do you want whatever it is you want? I can make it happen. Here's my man. He's not a good man. You know, he does the whole speech.
He's not a good guy.
He's not a good guy. And Madsen is like, you know, okay, I understand this kind of world and this kind of deal, and I will take you up on that deal and fine, but he doesn't really think any better of Ken because of it. And then Roman comes in with a completely different pitch involving, like, would you like to piss on the app? And he's like, ah, that's interesting. Yeah, let's do that.
Also, that was a, like, that escalation, I was just like, whoa, wait, what? I think at that point I did rewind the screener. It was just like, I just, there were two moments when I did that, and that was one of them. And I was like, no, that was that sentence. Cool. Okay.
Well, I mean, Kendall didn't have anything else to offer him. Roman has a big, you know, a deal to offer. And Kendall just has his party.
Why don't we just, like, take a big old piss on our app? I'm going to open up the app on my phone, and we can stream some piss on our little streaming platform. How's that sound?
Fuck yeah.
19, 20, 21, 22.
Yeah. So, I can't piss near other men due to, we don't know what reason, but please, go ahead.
And that's the only time in the entire episode that Lucas shows any enthusiasm for anything, really.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
But okay, let's talk about Comfrey.
Yes.
Who, who's trying to call Springsteen to rescue the vibe, and then that got countermanded, and now she's working on a jetpack, and she has to sell all of these He-Man lunchboxes on eBay, and his office wants receipts.
I was so happy that finally someone on Succession is speaking up about the mistreatment, because I don't recall this ever happening before, a subordinate that low down kind of on the food chain actually getting airtime,
having
to complain
a speaking role,
beyond like an eye roll or something. Like, this was the first time I've ever heard any of the subordinates speak up. Like, Kendall's assistant, I mean, she never. I want to know so much more about what that woman is thinking. Kendall's assistant is just like so beaten down, I feel like, and is Jess. And I'm always like, when is Jess gonna just like lose it on him? I mean, this is crazy. But finally, Comfrey kind of breaks that wall down and starts complaining. And then out of spite, she's going to go out with Greg. That's like her revenge, to go out on a date with Greg. That's pretty amazing to me.
Well, I mean, but it was interesting to me that the thing that precipitated that breakdown was her realizing that Kendall thinks he owns every single part of her life, including her theoretical dating/romantic life, and not just her having to ship things on eBay with receipts life.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was fun. I mean, no one thought this woman was going to say yes to Greg. Tom says it's like a haunted scarecrow asking out Jackie Onassis. I mean, this is really Greg's night as much as it's Roman's. He's so happy. And he's totally like aware that she's probably saying yes to him out of spite and to get back at Kendall, but he doesn't care. He's still so happy about it.
Greg has a good point, which is that Comfrey is much less out of Greg's league than Shiv is out of Tom's league. And so it's a bit rich for Tom to kind of be like, she's out of your league.
Okay, well, how'd you get Shiv? She's out of your league.
Oh. Testy, Greg.
Well,
Well, Greg, I'll tell you. I got a dick the size of a red sequoia, and I fuck like a bullet train. Okay? Satisfied?
Prove it.
What?
That is indeed what he said.
He said that.
Which,
but he also, said that. Like, and then, again, another weird escalation, and this was the second thing that I had to rewind, or maybe the first. I can't remember the order, when he was like, when Greg was like, prove it. I was like, whoa, wait, why is there so much phallic energy?
Well, I mean, like, Greg and Tom is the longest lasting romantic relationship in this show. It's been going on for 3 seasons, and it's like,
yeah, the big kiss on the forehead, you know, situation.
And like, if there's any kind of meet cute weird romance thing going on in Succession, it's Greg and Tom, right? So
wait, it's not Roman and that. The fascist candidate for president.
No, that's just a
I definitely picked up on
Dalliance.
Some vibes there.
Oh yeah, I mean, Roman will definitely get horny for anyone in the bathroom for sure for like one episode. But even the Roman Jerry thing has been played down this season.
That's true. Everyone was kind of hoping for more of that, but there's been less of that. And meanwhile, it's the Tom and Greg relationship that keeps evolving episode to episode. Felix, did you see someone shared with us on Twitter? Someone cut together a Tom and Greg romantic comedy. They basically cut scenes from Succession to make it look like a romantic comedy movie trailer.
Hi, Ma. I sort of screwed up.
Greg.
You're going to get a plane ticket to New York.
Your great-uncle Logan's birthday, and they're having a big party.
This is cousin Greg.
It's Greg. No?
I'll answer to both.
I hear you're the new kid.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just kind of starting.
I hear you coming in.
Come in and see me, and I'll look after you.
Thanks, man.
It's quite good. There's a lot to work with. A lot of scenes where they're having fun together and breaking each
other's hearts. Where they're looking into each other's eyes.
Yeah.
Breaking each other's hearts. Exactly.
That awkward wave he gives him at the wedding. There's just a lot to work with. Because, yeah, they're the most real relationship in this whole thing, maybe.
Let's talk a little bit. I want to talk a bit more about this sort of self-awareness of Ken when he comes out and he goes, like, it just feels like an arsehole's birthday party. And my thing from the very first meeting was, it shouldn't feel like an arsehole's birthday party. But, like, he was literally setting it up. You know, he's like, at the beginning, he's like, I've gone anti-fragile. Which is
that was a good line.
Yeah, he's like, remember when he's like, and I've talked to Hariri and Gladwell, and he's dropping all of these people like Gladwell and Taleb because he's like, you know, that guy. And he's like, but that's his whole thing, right? When he gets attacked on late night TV or when anyone has a bad tweet, he's like, everything bad is actually good. This is the nature of anti-fragility. He's completely delusional about what's good for him and what's bad for him. It's like, no, actually what's bad for you is bad for you, Ken.
I think he mostly is delusional, but he always seems to have these like moments of clarity when he realizes like what a fraud he is. Like there was that season 1 with the sneakers. He buys the expensive sneakers, right? And then he shows up to the meeting and realizes the sneakers make him kind of look like an asshole. Like I feel like that happens to Kendall a lot. Like he does asshole stuff. And then for a moment he's like, wait, I'm kind of a jerk. And then he goes back to
But then carries on. Exactly.
Carries on. That's
the thing. There's no growth. It's just like,
yeah, there is no character. And that's that's a defining feature of Succession, right? Is that no one has a character arc with the possible exception of cousin Greg.
And that's what makes this third season so frustrating is there's no growth, no advancement,
well,
right?
But this is what I mean about
realism. And there's no one getting like their just rewards, right?
Right, because in real life in media.
Yeah, everyone's convinced that Tom is going to jail and then randomly Tom doesn't go to jail and fine. And that's like just how it happens. And she saves the company and she gets no recognition for that. And that's just how it happens. And, you know, Ken is, you know, crusading on the side of righteousness and just winds up like a pathetic crawling nothing. But a pathetic crawling nothing with $2 billion, you know, a check for $2 billion being like thrust in his hand. So, you know, again, like it's the show it reminds me of in some ways is The Wire in the way that there's no like moral to any story, right? It's just like, random shit is going to be random, and it's not like a tragedy where the bad guys win and the good guys lose. And it's not like a morality tale where the good guys win and the bad guys lose. It's just like chaos.
It's more like Seinfeld to me. It's just like bad people doing dumb stuff. That's pretty amusing. No one grows.
And plus, of course, there aren't any good guys. Like, everyone is terrible.
Yeah. Except yeah. Comfrey, maybe. She's fine.
No. She's going out with Greg because she's, like, mad at Kendall. Like, this is... I saw somebody on Twitter saying, you know, they were rewatching Home Alone and it just made them realize how terrible all the adults are in that show. And somebody else chimed in, and all the children. And I was like, yeah, this is how I feel about Succession, where every single person is just competing for like baddie of the moment. And, you know, sure. I know we're going to have a show about the fashion in Succession, so I don't want to do too much into this, but the way that they style Kendall is so interesting to me because it's so like almost good. It the way that he wears clothes is very similar to what you just said, Emily, where he like will pop into a moment of consciousness where you're like, that jacket could be cool if the person wearing the jacket like knew how to wear the jacket and didn't say things like, I've gone anti-fragile, but is like unable to help himself. One of the shows I love that has, I think, underrated styling decisions is Ted Lasso. And one of my favorites, the way they dress Jamie Tott in particular, is who is this like pretty boy, louche, you know, English Premier League football player, but his outfits are so perfectly over the top. Like they are a person who started making millions of dollars in their 20s, has a great physique, knows they're super good looking, and is just being styled to within an like inch of their life and their hairline, but wears the clothes like a person who you would expect to be wearing those clothes. But Kendall's problem is he wears the clothes, but is evidently not the person you would expect to be wearing those clothes, and he just can't get over that disconnect.
Because Kendall is, it, like, everything he wears is a costume, right? None of it reflects himself. He's always trying something on.
He's
like, what kind of person do I want to be and what kind of clothes would that person
wear? What would somebody Elon wants to be friends with wear to this party?
I didn't understand, though. He wanted everyone to take off their coats and jackets, but he had that jacket on the whole night.
Exactly. But that's the whole point, because he should be the only person wearing a jacket.
Every so often you get like a hint of like, there might be a little hint of real Kendall here, like with the treehouse. Is not something he stole from someone. It was obviously like really Kendall, or the abortive attempt to like hand out canapes in He-Man lunchboxes. It's like, that's a little bit of like the real Kendall, but like it's always kind of weird and awkward and embarrassing. And he knows that, so he doesn't want to do it.
Maybe that's why he says to Roman, you're not a real person, because he doesn't feel like a real person either. You know, he's putting on costumes that don't fit and having parties with no friends at them. And not in touch with his real self.
Nope. Nobody having any fun. Just so horrifyingly awkward the whole time. The thing about Roman that, you know, and Emily, this is going back to your question about like being a big picture character, is I think he has the most interesting physicality on the show. Like, I know that there was this analysis of like Kendall for seasons 1 and 2 walked around like the weight of the world was on his shoulders and he's gotten over that. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. But I think with Roman, it's like he uses his body as a character too. Like, you can tell when he's trying to wind somebody up. You can tell when he's, you know, making like overt, particularly sarcastic comments. And the way that he was just like sitting on the chair acting super indifferent while like Shiv is having a complete meltdown. I just think he makes really interesting physical choices in a way that I don't really see other characters do.
Although Shiv dancing was a thing.
That was definitely an interesting physical choice, for sure. my first question was like, is that just how she dances? Like, how much of this is acting? I don't know.
No, it's how I dance. Like, I'm telling you, like, it's just, she just goes completely batshit. And
it's
just like
people
great
at clubs who have done some E. So.
And Comfrey's like, what is she on? I forget who, I think he was talking to Greg.
And it's Greg, right? Who's like, I don't think she's on anything.
Not on anything. Just anger.
She's
just angry.
Anger, frustration, rage. It makes you dance like, well, like that.
I hope something happens with Shiv where she like has some kind of breakdown or something. Like, I hope she pushes back against the confines of the role she's kind of.
She didn't push back against the fascist.
No.
So, well, she took the tried, picture with the Nazi. And then
she's
gave
a little off to the side.
Like, I guess I'll just go with the Nazi, I guess, but I won't be in the picture. Woe is me.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Hello, I'm Imi Harper. On the Slow Newscast from Tortoise, I tell the story of how a Hong Kong billionaire was silenced.
I got bombs thrown into my house. I got people came here, ransacked my computer. And I got people threatening me. I got this and that, but I'm safe.
And what it reveals about the freedoms Hong Kong no longer enjoys. Listen to Hong Kong's Rebel Billionaire on the Slow Newscast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Do we have any favorite lines? Emily, do you have a favorite line from this one?
I liked Lucas Madsen's line where he says,
I shouldn't say anything. Even the look on my face is commercially sensitive.
He says while he has the world's blankest expression. Like, you know, shout out to the Skarsgårds because they are a riot, honestly.
Stacey?
I have to resell them on eBay and his office wants receipts. Because I thought the thing that that line did is, Felix, you've made the point multiple times that, like, billionaires are really price sensitive, actually. And that that's, you know, kind of a thing that's really weird is, like, they're actually, like, super penny pinching. And it just was, like, a perfect distillation of the pettiness of someone ordering something in the most capricious way imaginable, changing their mind, and then making it the problem of the lowest paid person in the entire org structure who probably has like a studio on a sixth floor walk-up somewhere that is now filled with He-Man lunchboxes.
I think my favorite one, I don't think I've ever had a favorite line from Connor, but Connor came out with this wonderful line where he goes,
and I am interested to see who comes crawling first, Merkel begging for me to save democracy or Soros serenading me from the trees.
On some level, he genuinely believes that shit. He thinks he's like the, you know, the person who can push the presidential candidate over the edge, and he's going to have all of this power with all of these like important people in the world. And he is completely delusional, and it's amazing.
Maybe.
Where do people have won elections?
He's polling close to 1%.
He's polling more than close to 1%.
You don't know what could happen. Stranger
things. Nearly 4 million Americans. What are you talking about?
Did you guys catch that early on in the episode, I think it was Frank and Logan mentioned that they're talking to the Pierces again about doing a deal? Did anyone catch that?
Yeah, I think it was Logan just
a throwaway, you know,
casting
line
around for, I doubt, I mean, who knows? It's possible, but maybe this is the reason why Naomi is the only, you know, non-family character who like has recurred in multiple episodes. Even Marcia has only been in like one or two, right? But of course, next episode we get Caroline, right?
That's what you say, Felix.
I think so. Okay. I'm holding out. I mean, yeah, I'm holding out for next episode being the wedding, the Tuscan wedding. Yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. We will see Logan Roy dressed up in a swanky suit like we saw him in this show. Like, he was wearing a three-piece suit in this episode, which I don't think he's worn anything like that
Well, he was expecting to negotiate a deal to save the company, right? So, got to wear appropriate clothing.
Is that like what Logan Roy wears when he wants to impress Lucas Madsen? Is it a three-piece suit? Maybe.
But, I mean, that's kind of what makes the whole thing about Roman so interesting when he was like, you know, this is why I'm not your most useless child or whatever the phrase was, is that he seems to be the only person who speaks the same language as Madsen.
Yeah, Roman connects with, like, antisocial tech bros and fascist Nazi types. And that is his edge.
You would not believe how many people in Silicon Valley that combination describes.
These are not disjoint sets.
Indeed.
So who's Stacey? Yeah. To finish up, who is Lucas Madsen? Who are we subtweeting here with this guy? Is he like Daniel Ek?
Who I was thinking that he was based on. The dude behind Spotify, because one, the obvious Scandinavian connection, but two, just the fact that, you know, the thing that he says over and over again is like, my tech is better than yours. Like, the content deals will come later, was very much part of what made Spotify so successful. Like, they out-platformed everybody else in terms of the user experience. And then they were like, I guess now we should add some more songs. And that kind of single-minded commitment to the user experience, even at the expense of the artists, for example, when it comes to, like, streaming rates, that is very much who I was thinking of.
So we're going to be back with Rachel Syme next week, which is going to be very exciting because she's the expert on all things Succession behind the scenes, and specifically fashion. I'm very much hoping that we're going to get like a wedding next week in
Tuscany. Because the clothes choices.
But we already have enough clothes choices, like just on this episode alone, to be getting on with.
It's going
to
be cool.
Be awesome. Stacey, thanks for coming on.
A pleasure. Thanks for making me aggressively have to catch up on Succession.
I only put like, you know, 35 hours of like work on your plate and say, go on.
Yeah, totally fine.
Binge watch all of the stuff, all of the things.